My name is Nick van Rensburg. For our visitors, I'm on the leadership team at Bay City Church. Really excited that you have chosen to join us today, because this morning we're launching our new preaching series called I Am Jesus. And I'm ministering on the topic this morning of the resurrection and the life. You would have noticed by the songs that we sing and the conversation during the meeting is that we love to make much of Jesus. He is the central figure and the focus of our faith. And so he's reflected in the songs that we sing. I trust that he's reflected in the messages that we preach and that we hold out in the mornings that we preach. So the reality this morning is that without Jesus, our faith has no substance. In this context, we are excited to launch our new preaching series, I Am Jesus. I am not Jesus, but I trust that we get to meet with him and encounter him and experience him as we unpack truth this morning. Many people have claimed to be him. Crackpots, nutheads, delusional people who believe they are his incarnation. People like an ex-MI5 British agent believed that he was Jesus. Today he is living isolated as a squatter on a farm somewhere in the UK with no followers. There is somebody like Oscar Hernandez. In 2011, he fired shots at the White House, believing that he was sent to kill Barack Obama, who was the Antichrist. There are people like an Aussie. You have to include an Aussie. If you're Australian, forgive me. But there's this Aussie called AJ Miller. He's a former Jehovah's Witness. He claims to be Jesus incarnated. His partner, Mary Luck, claims to be Mary Magdalene returned. These are all people who claim to be Jesus, but the reality is they aren't. They aren't the real Christ that we know and whom we love. Unfortunately, a lot of their claims have led people astray and destroyed lives. You know, in the Gospel of John, which we're going to be looking at over the next couple of weeks, there are seven I Am statements that Jesus makes about himself. People have claimed to be Jesus, but they aren't. But there are seven statements that Jesus makes in the Gospel of John. He makes about himself in the context of who he is, that are reality, that are authentic, where Jesus has, history has proven to be who he is. And so we can quickly go through them. We're going to cover four of them over the next couple of weeks. John 14, verse 6, Jesus says, I'm the truth, the way, and the life. John 6, verse 35, Jesus says, I am the bread of life. John 10, verse 9. He says, I'm the gate. John 10, verse 11, I am the good shepherd. John 8, 12, I am the light of the world. John 15, verse 5, I am the vine. John 11, verse 25, which is today's topic, he says, I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me will live. That is a statement that is true. It's not some delusional claim. It is an absolute reality. When Jesus says, I am the resurrection and the life, whoever believes in me will live, there is truth and there is substance to that statement. It's not an empty claim. There's a reality to that, and we're going to look at that today. And Jesus is speaking to Martha. And in John 11, verse 25, and you can turn to the book of John, chapter 11, because we're just going to camp there this morning for a little while. Speaking to Martha, this is what he says to her. This is our anchor text. He says, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live even though they die. So Jesus states, this is not an empty claim. Jesus states that I am the resurrection and the life. What he's saying is only I can bring back to life that which has died. That is the claim that he makes in the statement. John chapter 11 is a context this morning, is that he chooses to use the death of Lazarus to illustrate who he is, what he can do. He uses the death of a man to show the world the reality of a claim that he makes. So he says to Martha, he says, I am the resurrection and the life. That is a claim that he's about to prove through the death of Lazarus to be true. It's not an empty claim. There's reality and there's substance to that statement that he makes. So Mary and Martha, their brother, whom they loved very much, has died. He had an illness and he has died. And they know that the only one who can save him is Jesus. In fact, he's ill. He hasn't died yet. I'm getting ahead of myself. He's ill. He's sick. They know the only one who can help them and their brother is Jesus. And so they send for Jesus, but when Jesus comes, he's already died. And so Jesus' response when he hears that he's got to come and to minister to Lazarus, John chapter 11, verses 4 to 7, you can read with me. When he heard this, now Jesus himself also loved Lazarus. When he heard this, Jesus said, "The sickness will not end in death." No, that's quite an emphatic statement. No, it is for God's glory so that God's Son may be glorified through it. Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was for two more days. Then he said to his disciples, "Let's go back to Judea." Desperate circumstances. Sick man. In fact, this sickness that Lazarus had was not man flu. You know, man flu, eh? The wives are all like knowingly, "Yeah, I know, my husband's had it. I've had to deal with that man flu." And guess what? He lived. This sickness was terminal. Lazarus was going to die. Desperate circumstance. And yet Jesus says that through this, God is going to bring glory to himself through this bad news. And so Jesus gets the news that Lazarus is sick. He waits 2 days. Before he responds, he waits 2 days before he actually goes to see him. He does nothing but chills and waits. The Bible doesn't say what he does in those 2 days, but he waits for 2 days and he decides to go once Lazarus has died. So like now you've got this crew, this family waiting for Jesus to come and heal Lazarus. But Jesus waits for him to die and then says, "Actually, then I'm going to intervene." It's like crazy, but it makes sense. As we will see. John 11, verses 11 to 14. Jesus says, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I'm going there to wake him up." So his disciples are just a little bit slow on the uptake. Jesus is actually saying he's dead. They say, "No, well, if he sleeps, he'll get well." In other words, sleep is the cure for all ills. I know it helps a headache. Jesus had been speaking of his death, but his disciples thought he meant natural sleep. So he told them plainly. In other words, he says, "Listen, you guys are a little bit slow in the uptake. Lazarus is dead. He's not sleeping. He is dead. And for your sake, I'm glad I was not there so that you may believe. But let us go to him." So he's not fallen asleep. Jesus is metaphorically speaking that Lazarus is dead. And he says, "I'm glad I was not there so that you may believe." What Jesus is doing, he's making sure that this resurrection miracle that he's about to do will be for God's glory. And the world will see and know that there is substance to the person of Jesus. He's not just a fly-by-night. He's not just a figment of somebody's imagination. There is authentic power that is going to be released, that's going to minister, and the world will see that this claim that Jesus makes about himself will be proven to be true. Jesus is saying that this is something that man can't claim to do. This can't be manipulated to suit man. What's going to actually happen through this miracle will be for God's glory. That God's fingerprints are going to be all over it. God's life is going to be all over it. God's power is going to be manifest. So no man gets the glory here, but God gets the glory through what I'm about to do. That's what Jesus is saying. And there's three characters in the story this morning that we can maybe relate to in the context of our own lives. There's Thomas, there's Mary, and there is Martha. Their individual response to Lazarus, I must be careful, his death. I nearly added an S to that and I would have got myself all tongue-tied and in trouble. But their individual response to his death shows that they themselves, there was something wrong on the inside. There was something wrong in their own hearts. Something had died personally for them. And so maybe like Mary or Martha this morning, maybe we've had some bad news. Maybe we're going through a circumstance. We're saying, "I'm actually needing this circumstance to change. I'm needing God to intervene here and to change it." And maybe the circumstance this morning has caused you maybe to live with some doubts about Jesus. Maybe you are discouraged. Maybe a little bit depressed. and you're saying, where is the life in this thing, in this bad news I've got, or this circumstance that I'm going through? I'm going to show you that Jesus desires to manifest himself and bring his life to that thing that you look at and say, it might have death, but I'm going to breathe life into it. I'm going to change it. And what I do there will stand as a testimony to the sovereign power of my Father. Amen? So Thomas, you know, Thomas, he has this reputation of being a doubter. We read through the scriptures. And so John 11, verse 16, Thomas, also known as Didymus, said to the rest of the disciples, when Jesus said, you know, we're going to go and sort out this little issue with Lazarus, he says, let us also go that we may die with him. That's a little bit of sarcasm response. Let us go there so we may also die with him. He's like not speaking life into the situation. Thomas is actually doubting. He's saying, this thing that we're going to is not going to end well for us. We're going to die, because they know that Jesus is going to be stoned when he goes back. They're with him. They're also going to get sorted out. So he's being a little bit sarcastic with his response. Let us also go that we may die with him. He's saying this thing is going to turn out badly. Anybody able to identify with Thomas this morning? And maybe you're looking at your circumstance. Maybe you look at what you're going through. You're expecting some sort of breakthrough, maybe an answer to prayers that you prayed, but nothing has happened. Maybe some doubts creeping into your heart about God's ability to hear and answer prayers that you prayed are surfacing in your heart. Maybe there's just a little bit of a dead spot in your heart this morning. Well, actually, I've prayed. God hasn't come through. Well, I don't know if he will. A bit of Thomas living inside of us. Maybe you've seen someone you know, maybe somebody close to you going through a tough time, and you're questioning, why isn't God doing something about it? It's like you're waiting for God to do something. God isn't doing something. And so doubts arise in your heart about God, really? Are you concerned about that situation? And then we become all negative, maybe a little bit sarcastic, like Thomas, that nothing good is going to come from this. So we become dead in our doubts, in other words. Mary, John 11, verse 20. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. Interesting, both Mary and Martha send for Jesus. One goes out to meet him, the other one stays home, Mary. Both initially full of hope, but Mary now, I think, finds herself a little bit discouraged. Why bother? We sent for him. He's dead. In the meantime, Lazarus has died. Why bother? He's dead. There's nothing that we can do. So I'm just going to park off, lock myself in my room, and make the world go away. Maybe we can view life sometimes with the same kind of discouragement, where we're feeling helpless, hopeless, thinking nothing will change. My circumstance is what it is. There's no hope of change there. Maybe, friends, this morning you're looking at your job and you're thinking, well, same mundane, boring job, dissatisfied, unfulfilled. It is what it is. A little bit of Mary's attitude. Maybe you say, well, will I ever find somebody and get married? Been trusting God for years and years. Well, it is what it is. There's many other examples we can use to personalize some of our struggles. Sort of kind of find ourselves in a hole, dead in our discouragement. Our discouragement leads to locking ourselves in our room and isolating ourselves really from God. How about Martha? Martha's actually, she's caught up in the whole delay. You know, the scriptures sort of expose something of Martha's heart, what she was feeling. John 11, verse 17 tells us that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days when Jesus arrives in Bethany. In John 11, verse 39, when Jesus, we read, tells the disciples to roll back the stone, and he's going to resurrect Lazarus. The King James Version describes this quite nicely. Martha, the sister of him that was dead, saith unto him, Lord, by this time he stinketh. Like he's been there for 4 days. He doesn't smell too good. How are you going to do this? Don't you know he's dead? Don't you know that corpse smells a little bit? It's impossible. Her gripe with Jesus was if he didn't take so long to get there, Lazarus would have lived. Because in John 11, verse 21, we read, she says to him, she says to Jesus, Lord, Martha said to Jesus, if you had been here, in other words, if you hadn't have waited and you had just come when we sent for you, he would not have died. So in her heart, there's a little bit of, if only you had come when we sent for you, he would still be alive. And maybe, like Martha, at times we can take issues with God because he is taking too long to come through for us. And in our delay, we die inside. Something of our heart just grows hard and cold towards Jesus. Can I say this morning, friends, that God's delays are not his denials. God's delays are not his denials. He is always in control, and he always works things to the good for his glory. He always does. So Jesus, sitting back waiting for 2 days, is not disinterested in what is going on. He's not ambivalent towards what they're going through. He knows exactly what's happening. He's absolutely and totally in control. His timing is not our timing. He's just going to do it his way, according to his plan and his purpose, the bigger picture in mind. And sometimes we sit there, we've been praying, we've been fasting, we've been doing, and God hasn't come through. And we think he's denied us. Actually, no. Maybe he's just protecting us. Or maybe he's just shaping and forming something inside. But he is at work in the delay. Just John and Nats this morning, I did have permission to share this with you this morning. You know their story. Some of you might not. But for years and years and years and years, they trusted for a promise that God gave them that they would be parents and they would parent a child and trusted God. And for years, they didn't actually see it. The realization, the reality of that promise. Today, they hold a beautiful little girl, Abigail, just who is an absolute delight. She's a delight. And I can remember standing with them and praying with them, and there was at times a wrestle with God. To be honest, there was a wrestle with God. But you know, I believe in that time, and you speak to them, and they will tell you their story, is that they discovered Jesus for themselves like they'd never experienced him before. They're able to carry a testimony that in the darkest hour, his light shines brightest. When you look at that little girl, it's for God's glory. The doctors all proclaimed, all this negative. But Jonah held on to a word from God, fruitful, fruitful, fruitful. And in that delay, they held on to that word. In that delay, wasn't it that God was denying them? God was saying, I'm at work here. And we don't always see the full picture of what he's doing and what he's at work in, but it makes sense after a while when his life does flow. You see, God taught them something of himself, and he showed us. When we look at that little girl, Abigail, he showed us what is impossible for man is possible for him. You know, up until this point, things aren't looking too good for the characters in this account. We've got Thomas, who is doubting. We've got Mary, who's a little bit miffed with Jesus. You got Martha, who's like, where are you? Where are you? Why haven't you come through? Because you haven't come through. Look at the circumstance that we find ourselves in. But you know, friends, there are 4 life-changing words when we read this account in John 11, verse 22. In the midst of doubt, in the midst of discouragement, in the midst of feeling maybe even a little bit angry towards Jesus, there are 4 life-changing words that Jesus speaks into those circumstances, and he speaks into the hearts of those that are gathered there. In John 11, verse 22, but I know now, but I know that even now, I know that even now, God will give you whatever you ask. In the midst of doubt, in the midst of discouragement, in the midst of depression and maybe even a little bit of anger towards Jesus, there is an even now moment. And maybe this morning you're sitting there, you say, I can identify with each of those, some of you. There is an even now moment, friends, for each and every one of us. An even now moment. Even now, whatever circumstance that we are facing, Jesus can transform it. He can turn it for good, for the glory of God the Father. Even now, as He did then, even now, He can do that. See, what the death of Lazarus teaches us is that faith needs to arise for us to believe that all things are possible with God. All things are possible with God. Where there is no life, things might seem dead to you. The resurrection power of Jesus Christ can bring it back to life. Can change that circumstance in a moment. So you've got these sisters grieving the death of their brother. You've got the disciples who knew Lazarus and they loved him. Jesus loved him. The disciples loved him. Jesus says, I'm going to breathe life all over that. And watch what happens. John 11, verses 23 to 27. You can read with me. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Now remember, been in the tomb 4 days. He stinketh a little bit. Martha answered. She's also a little bit slow in the uptake. She says, I know he will rise again in the resurrection in the last day. So she's looking towards the end of time. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live, even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this? What he's doing is he's stirring faith here. He's getting them to look beyond the here and now. He's getting them to look with a heart that believes in the supernatural power of God. Yes, Lord, she replied, I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who is to come into the world. What happens in a moment, in an even now moment, she has a revelation that the resurrection, friends, is not an event. It's a person. Revelation from events to a person, Jesus Christ. You are the Messiah, Son of the living God. No longer trusting in events, but trusting in a person, Jesus Christ. Beautiful, you're right, Brad, it is beautiful. And I think so often is we are so reliant upon events and our faith rests on events, but the one that stirs faith in the heart, breathe life is Jesus. He's a person. He's not an event, a one-off. When he is present and active, dead things come alive. When he's busy in people's lives, when we give him the space by faith to work and do what he can do, things come alive. They don't stay dead. John 11, verse 43. Jesus called in a loud voice. So now, Lazarus has died. He's in the tomb. Stone is closed and he stinketh a bit. Jesus calls in a loud voice. Stands outside the tomb and he calls in a loud voice. Why a loud voice? Dead men can't hear. He is proclaiming something of his authority and his power. He speaks life. That's what he's doing. He speaks life. He says, Lazarus, come out. Lo and behold, the dead man came out. His hands and his feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. Jesus said to them, take off the grave clothes and let him go. Take off the grave clothes and let him go. And I just have a sense this morning that people are living maybe a bit like Thomas, doubting. This thing, can Jesus do what he said he will do. Maybe you're a little bit angry with Jesus because he hasn't come through yet, or he hasn't come through in the way you expected him to come through. Like Mary, you find yourself, or like Martha. Maybe you can identify with one of those characters this morning. When I read this story, faith rises in my heart. And I believe that he can, he wants to, and he will. But we live with this tension that he can, he wants to, and he will. But he does it according to his sovereign will and his sovereign way. And we need to make peace with that sometimes, friends, that he doesn't always do it like we want to, when we want. It's not on tap. I trust this morning that faith comes into your heart by seeing and believing that Jesus can do what he has promised he can do and he's proven he can do. There's a miracle that's taken place, a resurrection miracle that proves that he is the Messiah, that he is the Son of the living God. And sometimes, friends, we need testimonies like this couple carry, that in their story, and that little girl, Abigail, we see the hand of God for ourselves. Fingerprints of God are all over that. And many of us carry testimonies like that. You know, the story of Lazarus in the tomb, very similar to the account when the body of Jesus was placed in the tomb after his crucifixion. In both accounts, when Jesus was crucified, died upon the cross, body placed in the tomb, stone rolled across the tomb. Like Lazarus, body wrapped up in grave clothes. Both were placed in the tomb. Both tombs were sealed with a stone, but there is a massive difference. When Jesus stands before Lazarus' tomb, he says to the disciples, he calls Lazarus out, he says to him, roll away the stone. You know, when Mary went to Jesus' tomb, the stone was already rolled away. Grave clothes lying there. So when Jesus says, I am the resurrection and the life, whoever believes in me will live. Empty grave proves it. Empty grave proves it. That death could not hold him. The empty grave proves that Christ is risen. The empty grave proves that he is the life. The empty grave proves that the one who believes in him will live. The empty grave proves that his resurrection power is available to all who believe, irrespective of what you're going through. And this morning, there is a call. Just as Jesus shouted out to Lazarus, come out, there is a call that Jesus is shouting out to us this morning, saying, come out. Come out of death. Come out of doubt. Come out of unbelief. Come out of sin. Come out of discouragement. Come out of depression. Hear my voice. Allow me to put my fingerprints upon that and give you life. These scriptures are God's voice, the voice of Jesus shouting out. I'm wanting to intervene. I'm wanting to transform. I'm wanting to get involved in your life. And maybe this morning, friends, we could be looking at our circumstances, believing the life out of has gone. Jesus, who is the resurrection, Jesus, who is the life, desires to speak forgiveness, desires to speak grace, desires to speak healing into your circumstances, desires to make his life manifest in those circumstances so that you may live. John 11, verse 44. This is a testimony that Lazarus carries. The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. Jesus said to them, take off the grave clothes and let him go. Jesus is in the business, friends, of taking off the grave clothes. The business of taking off the grave clothes of sin. liberating us from the bondage of sin. Every day. Every day. He desires to reveal himself to the sinners. And the Bible says we're all sinners. Jesus every day is in the business. I want you to put his fingerprints where there is discouragement and depression, maybe because of circumstances. Every day, Jesus is in the business of wanting to make manifest his healing where there is sickness. Can he? Yes. Does he always do it like we expect him to do it? No, but he does want to. This morning, maybe you saying, I'm a bit like Thomas. Jesus is saying that I am the resurrection and the life. He's wanting to reveal himself to you specifically this morning in your doubts and in your unbelief so that I am the Messiah, the Son of the living God. And maybe you've walked away from him for a season because you haven't seen him at work in your life. He's saying in a loud voice, come back. So like Mary, don't sit in the room all bent out of shape. Unlock the door. Come out. And allow me to breathe my life to that situation. Jesus is the resurrection and the life. I would consider it a massive privilege this morning to pray with you, if I may. Maybe this morning, so I can identify with one of those folk. It's for you to, maybe I can ask you, maybe just to stand. Get the folk around you to lay hands upon you. We would love to pray together for you this morning. If you're trusting God to minister to you through his son, Jesus. Thanks, Justin. Just guys, come stand around him. Craig. So guys, just gather around Craig standing here, please. Jesus, in this account of you calling Lazarus out the tomb, manifestation of your life in a dead body, we can take courage and hope for ourselves this morning, knowing, believing, trusting Jesus, that you are enough, as we sang about. Those aren't just words, but they're a belief that comes from in our hearts, faith, knowing, believing and trusting that you can do what you have promised and you desire to do.